Thought I'd start out with a little old school music this morning. Usually it's all ganja reggae music. I was like, let's just have some old school, old school for a minute. Anyway, I'm Miss Parker, and thank you for showing up this beautiful, freezing cold Christmas Eve. The wind is just ripping through here right now. It's so cold, you put on your jacket, and you wonder if you still have arms left. Let me get started with the Telegram disclaimer, and then I'm going to jump right into it. Here we go.
The material and information contained or given on this website or audio files are for general information and entertainment purposes only. All parties on this channel are not lawyers or financial advisors. You should not rely on this material to make any business decisions. While this channel does endeavor to keep the info up to date and correct, RV Project Help makes no representations, warranties of any kind, express or implied, about the completeness, accuracy, reliability, suitability, or availability with respect to the website, information products, services, audio files, or related graphics contained on this website for any purposes. All due diligence is the sole responsibility of the participant.
Thank you, Kanaka. I just love Kanaka. He did that for me a while ago, and his voice is just amazing. So again, my name is Ms. Parker, and I haven't done a live in a while, and I got to thinking about this, and I went through some of my old files. For those of you that don't know it, I've been writing corporate docs for vertical companies for about 35 years now. I was in the cannabis industry, and there was no one that was helping startups back then. So I started in 1996 was when I opened my first cannabis company. And we were helping people start their own businesses back then. That was the year that cannabis became medically legal in California. So a lot of what I have done in the audio files is I'm bringing up the things I teach my clients. And I talk to my clients about pitching their projects to angel investors, because back then, you know, the banks wouldn't let us borrow money for any of this kind of stuff. So there's a lot of tricks you can use in your speaking and in preparation, things you can do that will really, really help you. And so I found one of those original documents when I was still going through stuff here. And I thought, heck, this might be a nice program for my newbie group. So one of the things, so there's like about 10 different things I'm going to talk about. Does anybody know what the Socratic questioning technique is, or the Socratic method? Anybody listening?
Socrates?
Yeah, the Socratic method. So I'm gonna post a link here. And in this presentation, I always want people to be quiet, but not this time. I actually want you guys to respond if you know the answers or have any kind of answers. So the Socratic method is Socrates, because named after Socrates, because he believed that a disciplined practice of thoughtful questioning gives as much information to the student as it does to the person questioning. Okay, so Very Well Mind is a website I often quote. So let me get this in here. This is something If you want to know more about the Socratic questioning, if you want to get some...
right, the Socrates method.
Yeah, that's what Q. That's what Q has been doing to us. When he put up, he put up the different posts. Check out the above. ABOV link. Okay, there we go. So, and what it is, it's a method of asking questions in your interview that will stimulate critical thinking on your part, and it'll draw out ideas and underlying perceptions or presumptions on their part. It's a real powerful way to talk in business conversations, because it causes both of you to delve deeper in the subject matter. So some styles of Socratic questioning is, what do you mean by that? Why do you think that whatever it is they just said? How did we get to that conclusion? What was the point of this question? What you are essentially doing is you're making things clearer, and you're looking smarter in the process, because you're showing that you're doing active thinking or active listening and providing active thinking. You're listening to what they're saying, and you're asking a question about it in a way that will give you either more information about, you know, one of the questions, one of the ways I would use, what do you mean by that, is we're going to have you sign an NDA. Well, what is the point of the NDA? What do you mean by the NDA? You want to make everything really clear, and really clear to yourself. So if you use Socratic questioning, where you question what they just said, if there's any kind of confusion on your part, or even if there's not confusion, you just want it more clear. A lot of people, most people, they don't question anything that is given to them in an interview. They just accept it all, or they think they accept it, and then they move on to the next question without really truly understanding something. So if you got anything that is being said to you, use that style of questioning. Get over here, Megs. Hold on a minute, folks.
Hold on a minute. Yeah, you were trying to be bad.
I thought I could let the little poodle walk around while we were talking, but oh no, she immediately went and got a sock. She's death on socks. Anyway, so that's one of the techniques. If you have, say your project is about building homes, okay? Well, before you go in, you want to look up who's the most renowned builder. You want to look up who's using smart building practices, okay? And the reason why you're looking that stuff up is for you, number one, but also because of your interviewer. You want to name drop intelligently, okay? You want to reference, oh, hey, you know, this is my project, and I learned from John Q. Dillon that if you use these kind of building, in his book, blah, 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 if you use these kind of building practices, you save this much amount of money, or whatever the thing is. So you have the key to doing name dropping books is it shows a couple of things. If you name drop a name, that's, oh yeah, okay, cool. But if you name drop a book, that's way different to somebody who's asking you questions. It significantly boosts their impression of how smart you are. It shows that you're spending time reading. It shows that you are on a path of self-knowledge and emphasize being self-informed. You emphasize that by dropping the name of a book. But there's a trick to this too. You have to do it subtly, and it has to be appropriate. When they're talking to you about, they're asked a question about, how did you learn this technique, or what did you think of this technique, or there'll be some kind of questions that they're going to give you that is going to allow you to be able to name drop a book. And so you don't have to read the whole book. You just have to find a book that has something to do with your industry and remember the title and remember one or two points from that book. So, you know, I had a client who wanted to write a book, get funding to write a book about teaching cannabis information to kids. And so I told her, I said, go find a children's author that in her last book talks about the importance of education. And then use that quote in, then use that book drop in your presentation. So she did. She found a author, a children's author, that was doing an interview about one of the books she read about how to write, you know, basically writing for children. And so she said, hey, in this book, such and such said this and that and the other about writing a book for children. Well, I took that information and I applied it to my project. And you're saying so many things and not saying it. You're not saying it to their face. I care about my work. That's what you're first saying. I care about getting information from people that know more than I do. That's what you're also saying. I've made time in my life to read a book because I think books are important to learn more. That's what you're saying. There's all these different things that you're saying to them, but not using those words when you name drop a book. So, you can do it in any industry. You just have to look at your project, think about something important that would be attached to that project, and go look up, go find a book that fits those criteria. Remember the name of the author, remember the name of the book, and remember, you know, bits and points to that book that you can drop in the question, in the conversation. But that is one way to make yourself look really, it'll really boost how smart you are to them. They'll think you're a lot smarter than you are. They'll think a lot of really good things. I've had clients come back and talk to me and say that when they name dropped a book, that was a changing point, a turning point in their conversation. Because it, you know, a lot of people don't read anymore. And when you name drop a book, that really, really, really boosts you. It really helps you. Now, SWOT, let's talk about that. SWOT, is that analysis? All right, hold on. Let me get that out next. Okay. We're going to copy this image, see if we can post this up. Okay. So one of the things that they tell you in business is they want to know the strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, SWOT analysis, okay? It's a very common analysis in business. And a SWOT analysis is introducing a contrarian viewpoint. It doesn't mean you're arguing for the sake of arguing, but it challenges the status quo. So you say, here's the advantages of my proposition of why I want to do it. And you bring up a contrarian viewpoint. Like, this is the advantages of what I want to do, but continuity and supply chain are a problem. You bring up the strength and the weaknesses of your viewpoint. It's it's not arguing. It kind of sounds like arguing, but you're almost arguing with yourself. It's challenging the status quo is what you're doing. It shows that you are not just thinking about, oh, flowers and roses all the time, but you're capable of independent and critical thinking. One of the biggest skills to have in business is the ability to be a critical thinker. And so your interviewer is looking for those people that stand out and show independent and critical thinking. See, there's many, many, many ways to look at the same problem. And there's many, many, many different holes you can poke at the problem. And just acknowledging that this is there makes you sound smarter. It makes you sound like you really had a good think about this. You didn't just say, oh, I think I'm just going to have a horse ranch and put 300 horses out there and save the horses. Well, what if things are not the way they are? What if you've got political and economic effects that you can't put that up? How are you going to handle that? What if there's no market demand, you know, and they're selling all the horses to China and they're eating them, you know, so there's no horses to be put out there. What if there's something you missed, like obstacles you need to face? All of these simple questions can stimulate a more in-depth discussion with your, you know, if you do this at the RV, yes, or if you do this with your wealth management. But at some point, you're going to have some kind of project. Whether, I know there's a lot of people now that saying you don't need a humanitarian project. I think that's full of shit, but that's my opinion. But even if you don't have to have a humanitarian project, folks, I'm telling you right now, you've got to do something. You've got to do something. Because when you're stupid wealthy, and if you don't have a plan, if you don't have a goal, if you don't have a dream that you're chasing, you're just going to spin your wheels and you're going to get super bored and life's going to be it's just going to be boring. Okay. So you want to do your dream, whatever it is you think you ever wanted to do or to start, that this is the time to do it. And, you know, if you can follow it in line with what Trump wants, then, you know, the EOs of Trump's order, that's good. But if not, as long as it's helping in some way, it's going to be a good thing. But you want to be able to introduce a contrarian viewpoint. And a lot of my clients have said, well, doesn't that show them how bad our, you know, what our judgment is? I go, no, because when you show you have a contrarian viewpoint, it means you've actually given a lot more thought to a project than surface thought. And that's really important to an investor. And I think because it's important to an investor, it's going to be important to the RV people, and it's going to be important to the wealth management people, because it shows you're thinking outside the box, okay? And these kind of questions or these kind of analysis that you bring up, that really, really helps you in a business discussion. If you don't know business, you know, they know you don't know. So it's going to be like, wow, this person actually, you know, is leaning a lot more towards being a business person than they know. And it, you know, and it shows you're actually, you give a damn, you know, you care enough to actually do this extra work. Or you can just listen to this and go, and that's nice, and don't do any of it all. The EL15 method, okay? EL15, explain it like I'm five. ELI5, EL15, explain it like I'm five. It's a technique that you can use. You're going to break down things that are really complicated into simple, understandable terms, okay? This method showcases your deep understanding of your project and your ability to communicate it in an accessible manner. So when you're doing your practicing. You know, you're going into the bathroom or going looking in a mirror and doing your presentation. Think of your presentation and think about how would you explain it to a kid? And this ability, you wouldn't believe how important this ability is, because lots and lots and lots of clients would give, I'd say, okay, give me your pitch. I want to see what you're going to present. And they do the pitch and it would be like science, rocket science. And I was like, dude, listen, strip down everything to the basics. Don't use any jargon and use just simple languages. Think about how a good example of this is listening to the news and how they summarize the news in three sentences so that you'll come back and listen to whatever the full program is. That's what you're trying to do. You're really being straightforward and you're summarizing your project in simple sentences. A lot of people believe that if they talk in big language, big words, a lot of jargon, add a lot of polish to it, it's going to be better than it is. No. If it's a good idea, it's going to stand on its own merit. If it's a rat shit idea, you can't put rat shit on lipstick and call it good. It just doesn't work like that. So use it, you know, like you would talk to a child. And when you talk to a child, you do strip away all the heavy duty stuff and just use simple language. And that's what you need to do with them. Because you might have a project, you know, my project is working on the reefs. I want to grow hemp worldwide, and I want to use the throwaway portion of the hemp curd to make reef material to rebuild the reef for fishes. And so I'm going to be feeding the world with my pots, and then with the throwaway stuff that they're going to have from the pots, I'm going to rebuild the reef. So I use analogies all the time. And you can use analogies in the ELI-5 method, okay? And what an analogy does, it is explain the parallels or the same similar ideas between a concept that you know and an unfamiliar concept. Like, and that makes the unfamiliar one easier to understand, because you can apply logic to what you've already said or you already know. From one thing, or most people know from one thing, and you're applying it to your new. Like, you compare the layers of the earth, the different type of soils. It's this type of soil, and then you go down this deep, and it's that kind of soil, and farther down, it's that kind of soil. It's like the layers of an onion. Each layer of an onion is a different thickness, and as you peel it down, it exposes what's underneath. That's an analogy, comparing the layers of an onion to the layers of the Earth's atmosphere or the Earth's soil. Analogies make you sound way smart just by default. And it gives you kind of a teacher vibe. And you want them to think of you that have a teacher vibe, because you're going to be teaching others what your project is. You're going to be speaking to other people about, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing it, this is what we're getting done, and this is like that. And that helps you explain your concepts easier. Go through your project and see if you can slip in an analogy someplace in your speaking. And that will really help you to sound a lot wiser, a lot smarter. Like I said earlier about quoting a book, okay, there's another way to share information or introduce information or new perspectives. You introduce that by mentioning something you heard on a podcast, something that you were talking about with friends, or something that you read in an article. And you don't have to agree, with whatever the information is, nor do you have to completely understand it. That's irrelevant. But the fact that you mention it makes it look like you go beyond the headlines and beyond the breadcrumbs of what's going on in this world. And unfortunately, too many people are surface people. They're not paying attention to what's going on in this world. But a relevant source of information, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I heard that Trump's EO about reclaiming material and merchandise from the deep state. That's not a good one. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and my project is to help kids live better lives. And I heard about the kids being stolen for a drink, by the cabal. And this is one of the reasons why it came up about this project. What do you think about that? It opens doors for conversation. Is you give a perspective of something you heard on a podcast or talked about or read an article, and then you ask them, what do you think about it? And that can open a door for more in-depth conversation. Now, a lot of these conversation tips I'm giving you right now may not apply to when you're doing your presentation at the RV, but they absolutely will apply when you're doing your wealth management. Absolutely will, because a lot of people don't realize that the wealth management teams, they're interviewing you as much as you're interviewing them, because they don't have to have you as a client. You want them to want you as a client. And the way you want them to want you is to let them think you're really smart, or at least you're smarter than the average bear and know a few things about conversation. Because, oh God, people, you don't even have any clue how many people out there are just rock, dumb, stupid. I mean, stupid, stupid. They won't even lift up their shoes to see if there's mud on the bottom of it. I mean, so anything that you can do that boosts the way they think about you or boosts your level of intelligence in their mind is helpful for you, because that'll help you get wealth management teams, that's for sure. So one of the hardest techniques to learn and implement is called the yes and technique. Okay. Yes and is a way to present a counter argument. And by saying yes, you first acknowledge what's been said with the yes, and then you build on it with an and. So somebody shares an idea in a meeting, okay? Shares an idea with you in your, you're going to build homes for seniors, but what about building homes for young people? What do you think about that for your project? And you respond with, yes. And we could also consider that having young people in the same area as older people might not be a good idea. So maybe we should have two different spaces. You're not agreeing with them. You're actually disagreeing with them, but it doesn't sound like it, because you say yes, and we could also consider. It's a great way to disagree and actually sound smart in the process. So I don't ever use no when I'm in an interview. I don't ever use no, because if you say no, you shut somebody down. So learning and using the yes and technique is a great freaking tool, because it encourages positive dialogue without shutting down the other person, and shows that you have an open mind to listen to other ideas when actually you don't. You're still going with what you're saying, but you're not shutting down their idea. You're immediately presenting a counter argument. You acknowledge what's been said, and then you build upon it. So this is a super slick technique that I've used over and over and over, and Many times the person doesn't even realize I'm arguing with them because I'm not. I'm just opening a different way to think, a counter argument without getting the hairs on the back of their neck standing up trying to, oh, I'm going to defend this point. There's nothing for them to defend because you've taken the fire out of it by saying, yes, you've agreed with them, and we could also consider blah, 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 whatever it is that is what you want them to think. Super cool technique. Now, I think that many of the truthers have been diggers. Many of us in here have been digging for information, I believe. I might be wrong, but I believe that most of us have been. And one of the things I suggest to my clients is to refer to historical events. Now, that's super tricky. It can really bolster your arguments. And again, it demonstrates depth of knowledge. That's all you're doing in these tricks is you're showing your depth of knowledge and showing that you understand how the world really works. The trick to this one is you have to use it tactfully and you have to be accurate. So brush up on history, especially relating to your field of interest or any kind of relevant global events. Like you want to feed the homeless. One of the actual global events that you can immediately refer to is the fact that the farmers in one of the countries, I can't remember, I need to look this up. The farmers in, I think it's Germany, they were refused to get fertilizer so they can't grow their crops. So because this is happening in other countries, it might be really wise to have a business that's actually trying to feed, you know, a humanitarian project that's trying to feed the world. Because in this country, the farmers are not allowed to grow anymore. They've taken away their fertilizer. So that's an immediate parallel between past events that happened a couple of years ago and the current situation. Anytime you can draw a parallel between past events that have happened more than a year ago, usually the best events to draw on is 2 or 3 years ago, and your current project, it shows that you're not just focused on the surface of what you're trying to do, but you understand underlying patterns and the lessons of history that have already happened. And this also works when history is not important. When you say historically this happened this way, but now I don't know. If the history is not important, it still makes you sound like you're not clueless at all. You're just not up to date. So you can use it that way as well. If you're not perfect correct on what you think is going on. So that's another way to do it. But I always tell clients, brush up on the history of your field because you may be able to use that in a conversation. And even if you just use one or two of these techniques, it'll help you a lot. It'll boost their impression of you substantially. My clients, I had an 89% success rate in my clients going to interviews and pitching for money and getting it. 89%. That's extremely, extremely high. And these techniques are the things I would push my clients to do before they went to their interviews and before they went and talked to an angel investor to get money. This stuff works, folks. I'm not joking. It really, really works. If you have ever taken a public speaking class, public speaking class, one of the techniques that they talk about in a public speaking class is practicing the rule of three. Okay. And what this is a speaking technique that involves presenting ideas in a trio. In teaching, it's called chunking. You want to give bits of information in chunks. And they did a bunch of testing about this in teacher education. And they found that people are able to remember things easier if the information is given to them in chunks of three. It's really interesting, of chunks of three. They tried it, with just giving one piece of information. They tried it with giving two pieces of information, three pieces of information, four pieces of information, and they quit. Because when they were giving four pieces of information, the person couldn't remember anything at all. It was worse than giving it in one piece of information. So this chunking technique, or this rule of threes, is what you want to use, because it allows people to remember easier. All these kind of tricks are stuff, conversation things that there's been a lot of research on these different things, because research A, to either teach children and have them remember, or ways to get ahead in business. It's either one or the other. But in the chunking thing, it's a rule of three. So if you're discussing keys to you building a successful project, you might say it requires planning, execution, and evaluation. Okay, planning, execution, and evaluation. There's three things that anybody realizes has to happen in a successful project. But if you add more than three things to your list, it immediately drops off what they're able to remember. And if you do two or one in your list, it's super easy for them to forget. Especially, you would not believe it, but just giving them one piece of information. Giving them one piece of information is way, way, way harder for them to remember than giving them three pieces of information. You wouldn't think that's the case, but that's what they found. So when I had my clients, I would do the same thing. And it makes your communication clearer, more persuasive. It instantly sounds like you're extremely organized, because you've got a list, even if it's just three things. So I use the rule of three whenever I can in a business conversation, because it's simple, but it's powerful. It makes your communication a lot more clearer and more persuasive, because it sounds to them like you've actually really thought about this. So I will always use the words planning, execution, evaluation are the keys to building my successful project. And the thing is it's absolutely true. So practice the rules of three, go over your presentation. Actually do your presentation in a mirror so you can see how you look and see and listen to how you sound, and see if you can drop this rule of three into your presentation. Let's see about this. Okay, hold on a minute. I gotta look up this word, because I don't know how to explain this word. Okay. I want to use the word metaphor, and I've had a lot of problem with clients when I use this word, because a lot of people don't actually know what it means. A metaphor. So this is looked it up in the dictionary so that you'll know what this word means before I start it. A metaphor is a figure of speech which a word or phrase ordinarily designates one thing is used to designate another. It makes an implicit comparison as a sea of troubles. So one thing conceived as representing another, it's a symbol, okay? So metaphors are a way to turn a very complex idea into something really relatable and understandable. A lot of times you will use metaphors when talking to a child in the, like I was talking, break everything down like you talk to a five-year-old. If you weave metaphors from everyday life into your presentation, it's going to make your presentation way more colorful, and it's going to make your message in your presentation more memorable. You want to let your team, your wealth manager, or your RV person, you want to show that you can think abstractly and creatively, and that you can connect different ideas in insightful ways. This makes you sound more interesting. However, this is one of the tricks that can backfire on you. Because if you use metaphors that make no sense, you sound like an instant idiot, okay? So you got to be careful using metaphors. But if you can use metaphors from everyday life, they are a powerful communication hack. Like I said, they really help you turn a complex idea into something a lot more relatable for your person that's listening, for your interviewer. And I encourage my clients to use metaphors when they're doing presentations. But you know, if I got a client, you know, and I, oh, it was not so nice. Back in the day, if I had a client that was stupid, I never even told him anything about metaphors. Because I might as well just give him a shotgun and let him shoot themselves right in the foot, because they weren't smart enough to use metaphors. So I'd like not telling them that one. One of the other things is beyond metaphors is to rephrase the questions. So when you rephrase a question before answering a question, it helps you in two different ways. It serves two different purposes. Number one is it gives you time to think about your response, and you don't want to just jump out and give a response. You want to have a little bit of time for your brain to calculate on this, you know? And more importantly, second is it shows that you've correctly understood the question. And that way you avoid misrepresentations of what they're asking you. Sometimes you'll get a question and you'll think it means one thing, and when you rephrase it and make sure that you understand it, you actually find out, no, you didn't understand it at all. So this really, ensuring that you've understood a question before you answer it is really important, because you don't want to sound like a fool. You want to make sure that your response is framed to the best of your ability. And by rephrasing the question is great in interviews, because it can buy you some time to develop a proper answer. Okay. So if somebody says, like, what do you think about the current economic policy? You might rephrase it and say, are you asking about my opinion on how the current economic policy impacts inflation and employment? Or did you have another, or is that correct? I can't think of a second. Or are you asking about my opinion on how the current economic policy would impact this project? So practice rephrasing questions. It takes time to do this. It takes time to learn how to quickly rephrase a question. You got to think on your feet. If you don't have the ability to think on your feet, don't even try this because you'll stumble really badly. But if you practice rephrasing questions, like tell the person in your life right now, look, anytime you ask me a question, I'm going to rephrase it. I'm practicing so I'm better at my RV. And then just start rephrasing everyday questions. And it's a technique that you can learn, but it's one of those techniques you have to practice to be able to do well. Hold on a minute here. I'm trying to make myself a cup of tea. So I want to walk back here and check the hot pot. Yeah, I got hot water. My voice is getting a little scratchy, so I thought I'll just make a cup of tea. But yeah, learning how to rephrase questions is a skill. And, you know, if we go on Wednesday, you might not have enough time to learn that skill. But it might be a skill you already have. And if you know it's valuable, this is a time for you to actually pull it out and use it. Because it does work. Let's see now. Summarizing what you've been told does a lot of really good things for you. Unfortunately, this is a skill that takes a little bit of time to learn. Some of you already have this skill and don't realize you have it, but this is a way to develop critical thinking. And when you're running massive, huge projects, you want to have the thread through the needle on this, boy. You want to be able to pinpoint critical thinking. If you're able to distill a news story in really concise 3-sentence summaries, that's a valuable skill. You read a whole piece of information, and then you boil it down to just 3 sentences. Go get a newspaper, and you can practice this right now, and you'd be surprised. This is one of those things that doesn't take long to do, but you need a newspaper to do it. If you do it on the internet, it's harder because you can still cheat and look at the words. But go buy a newspaper, read a story, close the newspaper, and summarize it in 3 sentences. No more than 3 sentences. And then read another one and then summarize that in 3 sentences. That ability forces you to focus on the core aspects of whatever that story is. And if you focus on the core of a story, this improves your ability to identify key points in the story and articulate them clearly. And I'm telling you, when you're working with wealth managers, if you can do that, oh my God, you just look like a honeypot in all basket of flies, because most people cannot do this. And they'll want long drawn out stories from the wealth manager. And these guys, to them, time is money. They don't have time to do that with you. So if you're able to summarize things and a wealth manager picks that up, oh, they're going to want you to work with them, because that is a massive skill that helps both you and your wealth management team. Being able to be quick and accurate with your summaries during conversations demonstrates that you are very well informed, and it highlights your ability to communicate effectively. These are some of the skills you're going to need when you become a humanitarian. And so you might as well start practicing them now, because you're going to need this. And if you want the best wealth management companies to be working with you, they already know this stuff. They're looking for people that have these kind of skills, but they don't tell you to your face, oh, hey, can you summarize a news story in 3 sentences? Because they're looking for this, but they may not be able to articulate that this is exactly what they're looking for. But this ability allows conversations for work to go much faster because you've focused on the skill of learning. And a lot of people don't do that, and or they don't know to do it. And if the faster you can pick this skill up of summarization, oh my God, this is a skill you're going to use every single day in your life as a humanitarian, because you want to develop critical thinking as fast as you can. And doing this with news stories is the easiest way to do it. Don't cheat. Don't go to an internet and do it on internet. Go buy a newspaper. Because you're not going to have a mile of choices. You're only going to have what's on the front page. And I used to get a newspaper delivered to me every day until I could do this. And I was terrible at it. It took me a long time to be able to summarize quickly. But that skill that I learned by doing this is how I am able to write 55-page business plans. Because I'm able to take a huge, massive project and put it in a paragraph. And so that is a major, major, major skill. Start it now. Go get up in the morning, go get a newspaper and use the front page headlines. Read each front page story because those are going to be the most in-depth stories. And then summarize it. If you feel froggy, do it to, you know, the front pages of all the other sections, because the biggest stories in each section are going to be whatever's on the front page of that section. So learn how to summarize and, you know, read the story and then say, hey, I read a story about this, that, and the other. Tell your partner and see if you can interest them into reading that same story. And being able to summarize makes people either want to know more information about it or want to pass it by. So learn how to summarize. I tell everyone, every client, everybody that works for me, especially the people that work for me. In fact, if you work for me and I see you not doing this, I'll figure out a way to fire your ass. You won't be working for me. And I'm loath to tell you this. I don't want to tell you this because I know this is not what anybody wants to hear. And usually when I tell you this, they groan like crazy. So here we go. You have to learn more words, folks. It's very hard to sound smart when you have the vocabulary of a 10-year-old, okay? And you need to be a master of being able to tell the whole story with just a few words. The fastest and most natural way to sound smarter than you actually are, especially if you're speaking to someone that has a second language, is to read. Books, articles, studies, whatever. Because when you encounter new words repeatedly, they become a part of your vocabulary. But if the only content you consume is TikTok or YouTube, well, your vocabulary is going to be capped at just an internet forum and lingo. And you don't want that. You want a robust vocabulary that allows you to express yourself more effectively. English is a very confining language. In Alaskan language, they have over 100 words to tell you what type of snow is on the ground. 100 words for snow. We have snow. Okay, the English language is just snow. So by learning a robust vocabulary, you are able to express yourself more effectively. You can convey your thoughts and ideas with a greater clarity and more nuance, okay? It allows you to be a lot more precise. And even something that's not very smart, if you express it clearly, it still sounds good. So I tell my people, my three-letter team, you need to read every day. You need to read. And if you're in here working and you're like, fuck this job, I don't want to do this no more, pull out a book and read. I don't care what you're reading. If you're reading Tom Sawyer, if you're reading the classics, if you're reading articles, I don't care what you're reading. But if you're having a rough day, pull out a book and read. You don't have to work. You have to work for yourself or for the company. But you don't. If you don't want to work today, just pull out a book and read. If you come to work, you have a briefcase. And if you open that briefcase, there needs to be a book in there. You need to be reading every single day, even if it's just one or two pages. And the best way to get in the swing of things is to keep reading material within a hand's reach away from you. You're going to have, you know, you're going to be, some of you are going to be the point where you're going to have personal drivers. Okay. I read in the car. I read in the limo. I like, you know, everybody's, oh, sprinter vans, screw them sprinter vans. I want an old school limo. I want a stretch limo, old school limo, where the back seat of the limo is where the person that has the money sits. Okay. I want a stretch limo. Why? Because that's what I grew up in. I grew up in working with a limo of that nature, and I had whatever I was reading, and usually the paper. I'd always buy paper before I get in the car. And as I'm done, I flip the pages I've already read to the other seat, because usually it's just me in the car. And if I got a book, I've got a briefcase, that other seat in the back holds all my stuff. Where you go to Sprinter van, the seats are separated, so you can't just read your material and, you know, put it over there. So I know I'm old school, but I read all the time. I keep, when I'm working, I have a briefcase that I carry with me. And if I'm waiting, if I'm going to be waiting more than 2 or 3 minutes, I pull out my book. I pull out my article. I pull out my paper and I start reading. And I usually have two books. I usually books, not articles. I like books. One book will be something about business, something that's going to educate me, and another book will be free fun reading, where, you know, I might have a Harlequin romance in there, or I might have, you know, some kind of silly, you know, lose your mind book. And then I'll also have, you know, how to be the best at business, some kind of business book, so that I can, you know, I give myself one chapter of fun reading. And then then you have to do 3 pages of, you know, technical reading, and you reward yourself with, you know, a fun book to goad yourself into reading a technical book. And that works pretty good. But I challenge myself every single day with new words to keep my mind sharp and my language skills polished. I always sounded like a rock star, even when I wasn't, because I have a very, very large vocabulary. And that's because I forced myself to read every single day I was running a business. Ah, the tea is finally drinkable. Yay. if you, just before, like, if you're going to RV tomorrow, like you get the appointment, okay? A lot of people are going, wee, you're going to run around and celebrate. Don't do that. You want to strengthen your arguments through data, okay? So read studies. If you get an appointment to interview the next day, look up studies for whatever you're doing and read that study. You don't need to be an expert. You just need to be able to quote a recent study and in your presentation, because nothing strengthens an argument quite like data, and especially recent data. So you don't need to be an expert in this study, okay? You just need to be able to understand it well enough so you can briefly, you know, 1 or 2 sentences talk about it. And this is how you move from opinion to fact. You're quoting facts. Numbers rarely lie. So they tend to be a lot more believable when you're giving these facts. So that's what I'm doing. as soon as I know when the RV is, like, I read studies a lot just so I can be up to date about the ocean and what's going on in the ocean. Because everything I'm doing to prepare myself for the RV, for the projects for the RV, is to stay as informed as I can, so I sound like I'm up to date. Because the thing that I feel is going to happen now, this is just an opinion. I don't know, but I'm guessing based on history with this type of thing, I'm guessing that there's not going to be enough people to oversee the amount of humanitarians there are. There's just not. If you look at how many people that we think are going to RV, and you think about how many people they have in wealth management, or how many people they're going to be having the government, because they're already telling us they're going to cut government by 90%. That means they're not going to have enough people to oversee the RV people. So they're going to, I assume, I may be wrong, but I don't think so, because this is how it usually goes in the real world, is they're going to pick people that come across as knowledgeable and give them less guidance requirements, because you sound like you know what you're doing. You sound like you are actually actively involved in working in this and not just saying, oh, I think this, I think that. And so by doing all these different things, quoting recent studies, learning different words, being able to use these tips that I'm telling you about, it makes you look a lot smarter. And because you look a lot smarter, I think they're going to pick certain people, you know, to run projects and not have as much oversight, or have oversight once a year or once every 6 months. And that's the reason why I'm pushing myself to do all these extra steps, is because I don't want to have a lot of government oversight. In fact, if I have a lot of government oversight, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm just going to do it on my own. But I need the massive amount of money, because I'm planning on working on reefs worldwide. So as long as I can get as little interaction with them as possible, and I think the way to do that is by showing, hey, look, I'm not just average Joe. I actually pay attention and learn things. I think that's going to help me in the end, and I think it'll help you as well. So the last tip I have for you is using the pause technique. In business conversations, timing is everything. And when you pause, you're seen as somebody who is considering their words carefully rather than rushing to respond. It is a super powerful tool that involves just taking a brief pause before responding. It gives you a moment to gather your thoughts, and it creates an impression of being thoughtful and having an intelligence that makes you want to think about things. This technique also helps stop you from making impulsive remarks, and it gives your brain time to reassure that your responses are very well considered. And sometimes pausing can add emphasis to your statements, thus making your words more impactful. I use the pause technique. I sprinkle that through my presentations, because sometimes silence speaks louder than words. There you go. I hope you've enjoyed this little presentation. Again, my name is Ms. Parker. I'm from RV Project Help. My goal is to raise an army of humanitarians. Any questions? I have got to get off of here, because I've got a little dog who's over here barking to tell me she's got to go potty. So I'm going to end this unless you have a question. And I'm going to take her out for a walk, and I am going to come back to the channel. But I got to take the little monster out. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Well, if not, I'll be ending this presentation. And this presentation was recorded, so I will post it in just a few seconds. May God bless all you humanitarians. Have a very, very Merry Christmas. I think our time is short, and I don't expect to be here very long, folks. I think we're about to RV. God bless you, humanitarians. Goodbye.